Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, at least Mike Brennan, Matt, is caught in traffic. I am told it's a nasty day here in Michigan with black ice and everything else. But the baritone that you heard on the opening there, Foster Brown, is in studio with us. He's co-hosting today. Say hi to everybody, Foster.
Hello. Very nice being here. Thank you so much for allowing me to step in the studio. It's good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have on the line an old... Well, shit, I get in trouble when I say that. A longtime friend of mine, David Cole. There we go. I said that about...
That's right. Old is probably more accurate.
Actually. Yeah, yeah. I said that about a female friend of mine and never heard the end of it. So
That's right. You get in serious trouble.
Yes, absolutely. So I've learned my lesson, so I have to be careful. And Matt's just walked into the studio, so he's going to get in front of his microphone and join us. But we have David Cole on the line from Ann Arbor.
The legendary automotive analyst.
Yes, yes. Put your headgear on there.
You're too good for this show, I want to tell you.
Yes. Dave has many titles, and I have a long list of them in front of me here. He's the chairman of Auto Harvest. He's the chairman emeritus of the Center for Auto Research. There's got to be a couple other titles I'm missing in there, right, Dave?
Well, I'm an old professor of engineering at the University of Michigan that taught automotive courses back in the last century, and a new project that we're working on, Building America's Tomorrow, which is aimed at getting young people to think about careers in manufacturing.
All right, great. And then Matt just stepped in. Say hi, Matt.
Hi. Hi, Matt. Okay.
Thank you, Matt.
Yes. I'll say thank you, Matt, at the end of the show.
He didn't even have a beer before he sat down. Yeah. But we're going to be talking about, both Matt and I were at the North American International Auto Show Press Preview Days last week. I look forward to it. I think I've been doing it for 20 years now or so.
Yeah.
God,
yep.
I've been just forever. So I've seen all this stuff come and go. You know, fuel cells were real big a few years back.
Hydrogen.
And GM had that crazy platform thing they were going to slap the chassis or slap the cabs down on, and there were all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it was called autonomy, too, and it turns out that word has an entirely different meaning now.
Went a different direction.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. We'll get back to autonomous vehicles in a second. But what powertrains, I mean, the thing that was mentioned to me that I didn't think about was all the automakers there have a battery electric version of their vehicles available, which kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you?
Not at all. I think one of the most interesting issues in the auto industry right now is what the powertrain of the future is going to be. And all I can tell you is anybody that tells you that they know the exact answer, they probably don't, because the people that are working in the powertrain, it's all up in the air. We've seen some tremendous progress. You mentioned fuel cells a little earlier. Fuel cells have been 10 years away for about 40 years now,
yes,
and we're still working on them. And
yes.
Part of it's how do you store the fuel? Where do you get the fuel? In this case, hydrogen. But a couple of big things are really key. One is battery technology. And we have seen what seems to be a significant step up with the Chevy Bolt, which, by the way, was the car of the year this year at the show, with about 238 miles of range. And a battery that might be reasonably inexpensive compared to what they were even a few years ago. But still, we need to see the cost in terms of the kilowatt hour, dollars per kilowatt hour, to get down a little bit more. And we just don't know how long that's going to take. There's great technology, solid-state lithium battery technology that's still a ways away. But the whole powertrain future is up in the air. One thing that does seem clear is that the world, at least on an intermediate basis, is buying into the sort of plug-in hybrid, where you can have reasonable range on electricity and then extend that range with a liquid fuel, something like the Chevy Bolt, for example.
To me, Dave, tell me if I'm crazy here, but to me, the magic range is right around 400 miles, which is about as far as anybody really wants to drive in a day anyway, even when you're on a car-based vacation. You don't want to go about that.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, one of the issues is you can drive 300 miles in a gasoline or diesel-powered car and 5 or 6 minutes fill the tank.
Right.
In the case of the battery, that's a challenge. The rate of charging is a huge issue, particularly with the current liquid-based lithium batteries, because you can't put energy in too fast. You get overheating.
Yeah, they tend to burst into flames, right? Yeah, not good.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it's it's an up-in-the-air part of the auto industry. And in fact, when you look at the industry today and you talk about, okay, what are the big issues? Powertrain is one of them. Another is autonomous vehicles. That's certainly important. Future materials, talent. Where are we going to get the talent, talented people that are going to be a part of this industry in the future? In fact, the forecast is in manufacturing in general, in the next few years, we'll be short 2 million plus people with the appropriate education to be a part of manufacturing. And then on top of that, you have with the new administration, with Trump and trade and fuel economy standards and tax changes, huge numbers of uncertainty, which kind of makes it fun for people like you guys and myself that are kind of watching the industry.
Yeah.
Never a shortage of news, that's for sure.
Oh, and this that's administration right. is what we call a target-rich environment in journalism.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about, Dave, was the issues you mentioned. This sort of ties into autonomy, but driver distraction. I cannot tell you, I saw it driving here today, how many times I see people weaving back and forth, and invariably they are on a phone.
That's right.
I mean, what do we do about that from a car maker standpoint, from a technology standpoint? What kind of stuff do you build into the car? Can you build into the car?
Well, that's tough. I mean, one of the things that we're seeing in terms of autonomous vehicles that range from level one to level five. Level five is where you go to sleep in the back seat and the car drives itself. But as we get into the upper levels, I think what we're going to see is a better ability to keep drivers from making mistakes. If you do something wrong, well, for example, now we have one of the early levels, lane departure warnings. If you cross a lane or blind spot protection, you try to pull into a car, it warns you. The next step is that it won't let you do it. And I think that's going to be in here fairly soon.
That's level two or three, right? So
yeah, that's some of the braking technology.
That's level three. And it's hard to define level two, three, four. Level five is that I'm asleep in the back seat while I'm going someplace.
Yeah,
that's probably quite a long ways
that's
away.
That's a ways out. I just don't know if I'd be comfortable with that at any level, So,
well, I'd have to be very, very tired.
Yeah. Yeah, otherwise you could get very, very dead, So,
But the whole approach to autonomy and the potential here is amazing. I mean, we have the direct potential. We're looking at potentially 90% reduction of accidents, injuries, and fatalities. You've got secondary impact, lower cost insurance, which is not of real interest to the insurance industry. But you take things, for example, like hospital emergency rooms. One of the major factors in hospital emergency rooms is associated with serious injuries related to auto accidents. So the impact is potentially huge. But it's very uncertain. For example, one of the uncertainties as you get into this technology is who has the liability if there's a problem.
Yeah.
And the trial attorneys are sort of salivating at the idea that now we can go at the car companies rather than just individuals.
Well, that's always been the answer, right, is sue everybody and we'll sort it out later.
So. That's right. But the liability issues are a big deal when you start looking at autonomy.
Yeah. Dave, can I ask you, this is Foster Brown. You mentioned that the battery technology is so big. It's such a big part of what's going on here. Does Michigan have companies that are really invested in that? Or we have had, I think, in the past. Are we on the cutting edge of that technology here in Michigan?
I would say it's global, but because the auto industry is such a prominent factor in it, absolutely. There are some new technologies that are emerging. For example, There's an Ann Arbor-based company called SACD3. GM, by the way, was one of the investors in it, as was Dyson, people to make vacuums. And the Dyson ended up paying close to $100 million for the company. And this is solid-state lithium. It's not here yet, but the technology, if it can be made to happen, really steps up the game dramatically in terms of battery technology.
And I think I saw something
and
out of
that's here.
I think I saw something out of MIT about a sponge-based battery.
Well,
that it was.
There's all kinds of things
incredible
that are being looked at, and the whole idea. One idea, of course, with lithium is if you can get away from the liquid and the solid state batteries, and this is not easy to do, but you can charge it much faster. It has greater energy density, potentially lower cost. And that's just part of the game right now is we don't know what kind of path we're going to be on here because everybody is working very hard on these different things. And there's just a lot of uncertainty. So you can't place your bets right now. But what the industry is, and this I think is the more important point, where seeing companies that I would say are have companies, it's a Toyota, a GM, Ford, they're basically looking at every aspect of the industry and powertrain, autonomous vehicles, and they don't know exactly what's going to happen. But as it emerges, they're going to be playing in areas that are going to be important. Another thing that, in fact, talking about the cars at the show, it's the some of the hidden stuff there is something that's quite important. For example, the new Chevy, GMC Terrain, they've taken 500 pounds out of that.
Yeah.
And that's a huge step.
Yeah, the new Ford truck.
The Chevy Traverse, a couple of hundred pounds.
Yeah, the aluminum Ford truck took a lot of weight out too, right? So
absolutely. Yeah. And so this whole materials gain is a big deal, and it's not just the material itself. It's how you manufacture. For example, we're seeing, in the case of the Ford F-150, glue and rivets. And we're seeing a lot more adhesives across the whole industry in terms of weight reduction. So people tend to look at the surface and say, I like this style, I don't like this style. But underneath the surface, some amazing things are happening.
Hey, we got about 2 minutes left, which is not near enough time. But we'll get into the Trump administration. We'll give it about 2 minutes here.
Okay,
for what it's worth. Anyway,
so what do you think about the protectionist noises that?
Yeah, that's what I was driving
there.
At. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of smoke, maybe not much fire. But one of the things that somebody has told me that knows Trump is that he never starts out where he wants to end. He always starts at off on the side and wants to negotiate to the end. Like with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, I think it's going to live. It's important for this region. It's important for the industry, important for jobs. There'll probably be some adjustments. I wouldn't be surprised that we won't see too much more of jobs moving to Mexico. But it's uncertain. A huge issue is, for example, tax policy. We have the highest tax on corporations in the world in developed countries. And we get that down in a competitive advantage or repatriating dollars that are overseas. And that's trillions of dollars that are coming back now. They get taxed high.
Well, the problem with that high tax rate.
These are very interesting issues.
Yep. Well, the problem with that high tax rate is thanks to the loopholes and special interests in the tax code that only a certain few industries actually pay.
That's right.
And certain other favored industries do not. So
and this is a curse for small business.
Yeah.
Absolute curse.
They don't have as good a tax lawyers.
And maybe the biggest thing of all is what's going to happen with a corporate average fuel economy standard.
Yeah.
Because right now with 54.5, to achieve it and the cost to achieve it, will actually be somewhat lower than that with the appropriate credits. What we're going to see is likely a cost that consumers are not going to buy into with the limited value in terms of reduced fuel costs compared to the higher product cost. We could see a huge negative impact on jobs with that.
Okay, Dave, we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. Please come back.
Great to be with you guys.
We'll get you back in February, and we'll find out what's going on. Maybe by then we'll get a better idea what Trump's up to.
Well, it's going to be an interesting story for a long time.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks very much.
All the best to you guys.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much, David Cole, Chair of Auto Harvest and Chair Emeritus of the Center for Auto Research and a world-class automotive expert. We're honored to have him on the program. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with our next guest, drone expert Enrico Schaefer.
Hang
Hi,
on.
It's Matt Rausch.
Just go ahead and listen. All right, so this is Mike Brennan and
Matt Rausch.
And we have Enrico Schaefer on the phone from Drone Law Update.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Hey, how's things in Traverse City? You still got snow on the ground up there?
We still have snow on the ground. Going to get a little warm this week, but we should be looking good. We got plenty of snow.
Okay, so snowmobilers and skiers, take note.
Absolutely.
But we want to talk about the latest in drone law now, commercial drone regulations and where the whole drone industry is going. So, Enrico, just sort of tell us what's the most interesting thing you're working on right now.
Sure. There's a couple things going on that I think are really interesting. Number one is you might recall, you guys, August 29th of last year is when the commercial drone regulation got implemented. So on August 29th of last year, a new regulation allowed you to go get your drone pilot license and then fly your drone for business purposes. Since August 29th, the FAA has reported over 25,000 people have put in their applications to get their remote pilot certificate or become a drone pilot. So that 25,000 number over a few months is pretty significant, but not anywhere near the 600,000 the FAA had predicted at the outset. And of course, we still have some time to get to the annual mark, but it doesn't look like we will get to even 100,000 remote pilots within the first year.
So why do you think that is? Why do you think the number was short of what they were expecting?
I think that federal agencies oftentimes over-report because it helps their funding. And I think that 25,000
really?
People going to get licensed is a pretty big number, and it'll probably be close to 100,000 by August of next year. So that's a pretty sizable number of drone pilots that be coming into play over the first year.
All right. So, have the regs changed at all since the last we talked? Anything been advanced or deleted or anything like that?
Well, here's what's going on the regulatory front. The FAA is supposedly working on a update to Part 107. It would be a new rule. It would go through the whole proposed rulemaking process, but it will allow for flights over people. As you might recall, Part 107 does not allow you to fly over people for commercial purposes. So they're developing a new regulation that will be something along the lines of makes and models of drones. Drone manufacturers will certify their drones to a particular level of safety based on how much harm they can do if they run into someone. And then if you end up getting, if you want to fly over people, you'll have to use one of the drones that's been certified by the manufacturer to meet a certain safety standard that's being developed by the FAA. So a lot of folks, you know, for events and different things, they want to be able to fly over the crowd. And right now that's not legal. You can't potentially get a waiver for it, but it's hard. But there will be a regulation coming along probably in the next 12 to 18 months, which will specifically allow flights over people. And of course, the FAA is very interested in making sure no one gets hurt, right? So I've got a couple of injury reports for you guys just to kind of make you aware that injuries can happen. Are you ready?
Sure.
Ready.
Okay.
So the gory details.
One, yes.
Yeah. So the first one is interesting because, It resulted in a lawsuit by people at a wedding against the bride and groom.
Oh, no.
What happened is the groom allegedly flew his drone inside the tent, crashing the drone into two guests.
Oh.
The one female says she suffered a concussion and a fractured orbital bone, and the other suffered injury to the head. They've both alleged permanent injuries, and I don't think they're going to be going out and doing any more gift shopping for the bride and groom in that instance. So
yes.
You can get yourself in trouble.
Mazel tov. Here's a broken orbital bone.
Wear a helmet to the wedding.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you wanted to, you kind of eliminate that question, was I was going to ask if you wanted to fly a drone over your wedding, would that be legal? But probably wouldn't be, but a bad
idea. Put the kibosh
idea,
on
right?
that.
Yeah, okay. Whoa.
So, Mike and Matt, I think this one went wrong when he decided to fly him inside the tank. I think that may have been the problem.
How big was the thing?
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty big. Was it like a Phantom 4 or something?
Yeah, I think it was a new Phantom 4. I think I read somewhere. And so, but it, you know, I mean, look at it. The reality is that the guy was a novice. He didn't really know. He wasn't a really good, strong drone pilot. And as much as the drones seem really easy to fly, they're not always as easy as you think. And one little thing can lead to 10 really bad things. So you have to really be a skilled drone pilot to put your drone in proximity to people.
I thought maybe he might have taken out the cake.
Yeah, that would have probably gone over a little bit better. The other one is a really interesting one because you may have remembered during a Pride parade in Seattle, there was an incident last year in the summer where a woman was knocked unconscious when she was struck by a small drone. And that person who was flying the drone was actually charged with a gross misdemeanor, a reckless behavior that could result in serious bodily injury. 6-member jury found that he was guilty by a unanimous verdict. So it may not only be an injury, but you could get yourself in trouble with the law for reckless behavior.
I was going to say,
different than if you drove any other vehicle recklessly.
That sounds like an offense that would be more than just a few weekends on the highway cleanup detail. It sounds like that one might actually involve some jail time.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, but reckless endangerment is a criminal law that can be applied to just about any activity. So it could be up to a year in jail and $5,000 fines. And so you don't want that kind of stuff happening to you if you just unpacked your Christmas drone and you're going to go out and fly. Just do it safely. That's the main thing.
Which brings up another question. Can you be charged with drunk drone driving?
Woo!
Absolutely.
Yes.
So just like if
say
you
that
are,
fast three times.
If you are flying commercially, there's an actual regulation under Part 107 that precludes you from flying within 8 hours of consuming any alcohol.
Oh, so it's just like flying an airplane then.
It's not only drunk, it's just having a drink within 8 hours. So it's no different than if you were doing any other risky activity. They do not want you doing it anywhere near alcohol or any sort of drugs. So you have to be careful about that. Now, on the recreational side, you don't have to deal with Part 107, but you could rest assured if you cause injury to someone and they do a breath test, that will become a key item in your prosecution as to why you were being reckless.
Enrico, this is Foster Brown from the Internet Advisor. This last weekend on our show, Rick Broida had just come back from one of our gadget guys, came back from CES, and he had this little drone called Elfie.
Pocket drone.
It's a pocket drone.
For $50.
For $50. Are there any kind of regulations about those types of things? No, it's not
I don't think it's heavy enough. It's got to be at least a half a pound, right?
Right.
I was going to ask, what are the regulations that apply to something like that?
So as long as you're doing it recreationally, you don't have to deal with these commercial Part 107 regulations. And in that instance, there's some debate as to whether or not the FAA has any jurisdiction, but essentially the FAA is imposing that you can't be careless or reckless. You have to stay below 400 feet, stay away from other aircraft in airports, keep your drone within line of sight. You have to be able to see it at all times. And you cannot fly under alcohol or drug influence. Stay away from emergency responders. Recreationally, you're going to be okay. For the commercial drones, if you're using a drone for business purposes, you have to fly under Part 107. So a lot of these little drones are recreational, so it's not a big deal, and they're really designed for indoor use, and the FAA has no jurisdiction indoors.
So I had a question about how the drones are going to be certified to be safe around people. This sounds like an opportunity for the testing industry, for one thing. But what kind of criteria are they looking at to certify drones as being safe around people? Softer materials, softer fan blades, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so no one knows for sure. But what we expect is that there will, number one, weight is going to come into play. Number two, whether or not the drone has collision avoidance built into it will come into play. Whether or not the propellers have guards on them to preclude them from directly striking someone, if in fact they do come in proximity to skin, that kind of thing, is going to be a factor. And so we're all anxiously waiting to see what the total list is. But the main point is that it is going to be a boon for the testing industry, because it's no different than cars. They're going to have to be safety tested by crashing into different things. That data is going to spit out safety criteria, and that safety criteria is going to get baked into the regulation.
Okay, I immediately went to more damage to crash test dummies, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, right.
Poor
crash test, they're already beaten up so bad in those auto tests, right?
Give them a haircut.
Exactly. Yeah. And the other big news was we had every once in a while we see a report of an incident where a drone hits an aircraft, and in every instance to date, it turned out to be untrue. There was a report a couple weeks ago about a Boeing 737. The pictures of the front of the jet with significant damage, and it was reported that it had struck a drone. Turns out a week later, it was confirmed that it was not a drone. So we often get these false reports. And of course, the only thing that makes headline is the initial headline, which says it may have been a drone, but they rarely report on the follow-up, which turns out, oh, it wasn't. We are still very much in a safe type situation where we have not seen any significant incidents between aircraft and drones in the U.S.
All right.
Okay, so Enrico, if people want more information about your drone expertise, where would they go online to get it?
You go to dronelaw.pro.
Okay. And you're an attorney, and basically most of your practice is drone law, right?
Yeah, really drone law is taking up most of my time these days, and it's both on the pilot side and the operator side. They need contracts. They need business structure. And then, of course, there's the regulatory side where you got to comply with the regulations. And then I suppose someday there is going to be some injury stuff that comes out of all the drones that are being here.
And all said and done, Enrico, if somebody wants to set themselves up as a commercial drone business, how much money, by the time you get done with the paperwork and the legal stuff and everything else, under $5,000, more or less? What do you think?
I think to do it right, you should budget $5,000 to $10,000. You know, the reality is that you're going to spend $1,000 plus for the drone. You're going to want to take training to get the Part 107 exam passed. You got to pay $150 to the government to take the exam. You're going to need insurance. You're going to want contracts from a drone attorney who knows how to draft them up and get all your paperwork to you in a way that's going to be Part 107 compliant. So $5,000 will get you going. If you got a little bit more than that, you'll be able to put a little bit more business structure around it.
All right. Thanks very much. Drone law expert Enrico Schaefer, a guest once again here on the M Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll be right back with our next guest, Rick Beckers. Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And
We're giving hand signals back and forth.
I got it. You take it. Yeah, right.
All right, I got the ball.
Intro. Yes, you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, and eventually we'll get to our next guest, who's a really terrific one.
A really terrific one. Rick Becker's a long friend of ours, and he's the CEO of Cloud Tech One out of, I'm going to get it right, I always want to say Farmington Hills, but it's Rochester Hills. Right,
ding,
Rick?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah,
all right,
get that.
All right.
There okay. we go. All right, yes. So anyway.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes. I Rick was supposed to join us in studio, but contacted me and said he was a little under the weather. And since we want him to keep that disease out there in Rochester Hills, a little bronchitis there, right? So
Right.
Well, you sound good, though. So
I went and did my vocal exercises, you know, me.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. All right.
Good to go.
Okay.
Well, sometimes when you get sick, it makes your voice deeper, so you get the whole Mark Allman thing going.
Yeah,
so
that's this morning. Alan Allman, yeah.
Or Alan Allman, yeah, right.
Hello, Tom.
Yes.
So we're going down a whole different tangent here.
Yeah, rabbit hole.
We'll let this one go. So, congratulations. Cloud Tech One has been named to the top 50 companies to watch, which is, of course, the big award ceremony that the Small Business Association of Michigan. And
yeah, it's late March, early April. It's a terrific event.
Yeah, a whole bunch of folks. But state-sponsored. The state recognizes second-stage companies. There's certain criteria. I don't recall what they all are, over $1 million or something or other.
And a growth rate and that good stuff.
So anyway, that's good, right? So when do you find out, you've been nominated. Do you know if you actually are a top 50 company or what's the deal?
Well, we have made it to the final round.
That's what
I'm told as of last Friday or so.
Okay.
So we're really, really excited about that. It's Michigan Celebrates Small Business. And, the folks that have come out of this group in the past, you know, looking at the history of the thing is pretty impressive. So I'm just tickled to death to be included in it. And my gang, the Cloud Tech One people here, are fired up and trying to spread the news and continue on. We actually think that we will propel ourselves many times over, not just because of this, but just another part of the story of Cloud Tech One and our success. And so,
as a disclaimer, MI Tech News is a media sponsor of these awards, so we promote them. And congratulations again. I know Matt wanted to ask you a question.
Okay. Well, I also know, Rick, you're heavily involved with Automation Alley, which is a really important tech-based business promotion group around here. You're, in fact, chairman of the technology committee. And so I just kind of wanted to know what's new for 2017 with the Technology Committee of Automation Alley. I know that's a very important part of the Automation Alley membership.
Yeah. And, as I've told you guys in the past, and I'm in a way trying to burrow my way into all of the technology communities of the area because I want to be an advocate of the community in general. And so there are just tons of great people at Automation Alley and some of the other, Tech 248 and some of the other groups that I belong to. But Automation Alley is busting at the seams, and we've got all sorts of great things going on. 2017 is going to be a tremendous year. And in my role in the technology committee, we're revamping that whole committee, addressing Industry 4.0, IoT and Industry 4.0. That's the objective, to stamp upon the world the mark that our town is the town when it comes to Industry 4.0. And so we're trying to align people, gather as many as we can who have an interest in this area, and get them all fired up and pick their brains and introduce them to one another and generally create the largest possible positive network we can around this thing. So at Automation Alley, the next technology committee meeting is January 27th. I welcome anybody to reach out to me who might be interested in attending that, member or non-member. You can come by and actually visit for two times, I believe it is, before they're going to ask you for any kind of commitment. Mm. But you can come and see what we're up to, what we're talking about, see if there's a fit for you and your company, get your voice heard, all those types of things. We're developing a lot at Cloud Tech One over at Automation Alley because we are a new foundational member. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, yeah, okay. Get the bell here.
Yep.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We're a little slow today.
We're a member over there now, and we'll be using the facility a lot to just bring about as much as we can in terms of networking for Southeast Michigan and the technology people. We've got something in mind for the third Thursday of every month. We're throwing around a name of you know, you call these networking events mixers a lot. Well, we're going to call ours a tornado.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
It's coming up in
February,
right?
Will Dorothy and Toto be there as well?
Yeah, well, you never know. That's just it. You got to show up to find out.
Oh,
but
okay.
It is. It's February 23rd will be the first one. They're going to be morning events from like 7:30 to 9:30. And no, we're not sure the format. It certainly isn't going to be like a networking format. But we're going to take what we learned from Cloud Tech One University and kind of throw that in there so that there's an educational component to it all the way through. We'll try to bring some of the fine folks from some of the technology vendors and give the local technology entities like ours an opportunity to speak and talk about what they do and just keep it a collaborative event. So we like that idea.
Is breakfast served at this event?
You know, I don't know as they will be at maybe a Continental in the beginning, and and if it goes great and gangbusters and everybody shows up, I'm open to anything, whatever it takes to get everybody in the room and talking. One of my favorite things to say is it all starts with a conversation. So show up, let's have a conversation, let's see if we can't strike something up that it becomes mutually beneficial for you and I and everybody that's there, and then anything's possible.
All right, so I think we mentioned when we were talking this morning that you've got some current promotions that you wanted to highlight. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Sure. Well, 2017 is going to be a big year, as I said, for us, so we're going big. And along those lines, we want everybody to experience the MSP way to support your IT. We know that there's no better way to get it done, no more efficient way to get it done, and no more cost effective way to get it done. So we're going to give everybody the opportunity to experience it free of charge. Have us out, have a chat with us. We'll do an assessment for you. We're actually going to hook you into our MSP help desk pipeline and give you the ability to experience it that 30 days free so that you have the opportunity to do just that without any risk on your part. Out of that free assessment, we're also having free assessment February. So during the month of February, if you need an assessment done, whether that's a network assessment, a security assessment, or any of the assessments that we provide, PCI compliance, et cetera, call us out. We'll do the assessment, show you where you're at, where you need to be, how to get there, all those types of things. Because we know that once you meet our people and you see our processes, you'll be impressed enough that somewhere down the line it'll evolve into something good for both of us. And then if you've made a decision and you want to move into an MSP model in terms of your IT support, if you sign into an agreement of 12 months, we're actually given 15 months of full coverage for the same price of 12. So it's a substantial discount. Or
25% more free, as they say. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Those are just some of the things because we think that MSP is it's not a bleeding edge thing at all. It's a very mature model, and it works, and we've spent a lot of time and energy and money developing ours so that it's faster, better, leaps tall buildings and all of that sort of thing.
I think I've seen you with a cape,
right?
By the way. Have I seen you with a cape? Maybe not. Okay. So
no.
Oh,
no,
right.
I don't go to those events.
Okay.
Hey, if it did, it would have clouds on it.
That's a different event. Sort of a dollar value, this free thing that you're giving away, can you quantify a dollar value, what's it worth kind of thing, just people know?
Yeah, I mean, it depends obviously on how many devices you have, because for the majority, in most instances, MSP pricing is based on the number of devices, because that equates to how much labor you have to put into proactively and reactively supporting a computer network, right?
Yep.
So let's say you had 5 servers and 50 workstations. That monthly cost is going to be somewhere in the realm of, and I'm doing math real fast now, which I probably shouldn't do. You know, you're probably looking at 15, well, I'll bet you're looking at $5,000 a month. No, not even close.
Mr.
For the
Zero
workstations, there? It's $1,750 a month.
I was going to say, 5G sounded a little high there, but yeah, that sounds good. And so it's really...
It's so it would cost you $2,500 a month to support that gear I was just telling you about.
Yeah.
So 3 months free, that's $7,500.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's great.
So, Rick, I've got to ask you the traditional Matt Roush question here that I ask of all IT companies: is are you hiring right now? And if so, for what skill sets? And you know, just so I can get the plug in. So, how can academic institutions like my employer, Lawrence Technological University,
he's got people that he wants to place? Right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So what kind of skill sets are you looking for right now?
I am looking for server techs, desktop techs, firewall and switch techs, router techs. You know those. These are computer technology guys mm-hmm. and girls.
With a lot of experience, will you take entry level or train them?
Well, at this moment, immediately, I don't have a need for entry level because I just brought in some interns and some younger, fresher people, and we're training them up. We like to do that. So right now, today, I've got some mid-level openings. We like to, you know, bring people in where they're not too long in the tooth in the industry and haven't learned any bad habits.
Yeah, that would be us, right? So we were looking at, 3 to 5 years experience, something like that? Or
Yeah. And, you know, and you can get up to speed faster than that in a lot of cases, mostly because the kids have had these devices in their hands all their lives anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
So by the time they get the formal education, they've already they know what they want to do, and all they're doing is going to get a certificate or a degree behind it. And so, yeah, we would definitely take some people out of LTU and put them to work.
All right. Thanks very much, Rick Beckers. We've run out of time for this segment, but it's CloudTech1.com if you want more information on this company and what it can offer to you. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll be right back with the next segment of the M Squared TechCast. Our old buddy Foster Brown is going to talk to us about the WJR Internet Advisor. Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to segment 4 of, what is this, episode 64 now, I think?
You know, I should probably know that,
of
but
the
I
M-Squared
don't.
Tech
I think
cast.
It's 65, I think.
Is it 65?
Oh, my.
Foster would know because he does the
Well, I was going to say, I guess that means we're eligible for Medicare now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, as long as we can keep it, right?
Yeah, we've hit 65.
Sure. but speaking of Foster, why don't you introduce Foster?
All right. Well, Foster Brown
needs no introduction.
Needs no introduction. He is the founder of the Internet internet advisor on WJR. Best set of pipes in the business, and one of the genuine nice guys in the business. So we're happy to have him here as a guest today. Foster, welcome.
Honored. Thank you very much. Matt, it's good to be here with two guiding lights in the tech industry.
Blind leading the blind is more.
I really enjoy
muddled through every
I enjoy
week.
Listening to you guys and the way you ask questions of these people from different industries. Like with Rick Becker's just recently, it was fascinating hearing the connections that you guys already know about. And Dave Cole, the first interview we had, that was – I definitely made notes on that. I want that guy's phone number.
Oh, I'll get it to you.
He is one of the legit global experts in the auto industry.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Mr. Spin. You read the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, you'll read Dave's name.
Yep, absolutely. So. And it comes from the family background, too, because his dad was what?
Chairman.
Yeah. Ed Cole.
Ed Cole was chairman of GM in the 60s and 70s, I believe.
So it's definitely gasoline in the veins and all that good stuff.
The day of Generous Motors.
Yes.
Yes, how times have changed.
We do the best we can. But Foster, tell us, what's the history of the Internet Advisor? Tell us a little bit about
it's interesting because it began as part of a weekend program that I was doing on WJR. It was the Great Weekend Program. And it was on Saturday mornings from 5 until I think it was 9. And as part of that, after doing it for about a year and a half, I was having some trouble with my connection to the Internet. And Gary Baker, at that time, was running my ISP.
Yeah, Online Tech.
Yep.
That Jan Ness bought and made into a multi-million-dollar operation.
It has become so much more with Jan Ness and met a multi-state kind of a storage company. But anyway, it started as part of my program where I brought Gary on to answer questions about my connection to the Internet. I was having a terrible time, and it turned out it was a rogue squirrel.
I've had
this
that exact
This is actually
problem.
A real story. This is a real story.
No, I had a few weeks ago, I had Internet trouble around Thanksgiving at my house, and I couldn't be there to meet the tech, but the tech checked the line outside, and he left a tag on my door saying, replace the line. It was heavily water damaged due to squirrel chew, which was a phrase I'd never heard before.
I didn't know that was still going on, but there it is. Yeah.
that's what those squirrel little chew. Pouches that carry in their pocket. Yeah.
Hungry little buggers. Yeah. Apparently the insulation tastes good to them. I don't know.
So. I think there was something I saw that they had used peanut oil in the development of some of the coverings on the wiring.
That explains it.
And, snack time. But in any case, that had led to, terrible reception. And we figured it out.
And Gary nailed it. He knew what it was right away.
He did. He got that fixed for me.
Only Gary would
and
know that.
And in the process, what I did was I took the last half hour of the program then, and I thought, let's just open this up to everybody else. This was 1998. Mm-hmm. It was the beginning, 98, 99. It was the beginning of the tech revolution in terms of people getting on the Internet and really getting to be part of it, online.
That was kind of the early stages, the 90s.
Yep. What was it? When did the first...
1994 was the first...
That was Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web.
Well, no, that was when Andreessen came out with the graphical interface.
That's it, graphical user interface.
93 or 94, I'm not sure which.
Yeah. What was the browser at that time that was the...
Netscape.
That's it. Anyway, people had all started, including me, had started coming on board with this. And so I thought, let's open up the phone lines and see what people... And we just had a ton of people calling in every Saturday. We just couldn't keep up with the demand. So... that was where it began, and then through a series of changes at JR, I lost the weekend program, but we kept that Internet Advisor show on the air there, and thanks to Gary. Gary really was the one who carried it through there, and how Gary has had such an incredible career. You know him from the days of – he is Mr. Connection IT anywhere
back
in Detroit.
Around 2000, we started the Michigan Computer Show. I can't remember what the proper name was, but Gary was behind that, where we were trying to get the whole computer industry together – what it was back then, 17 years ago for an annual conference, and we did it at the old – it was in Dearborn at the Hilton there.
Was that
something?
The IT Summit? Was that
maybe
what it was called?
Oh, that might have been. IT Summit. That's what it was. I couldn't remember the name.
That's the kind of person who was my co-host and buddy and co-founder of the program. And so he really carried it through. And then through a series of changes, I then got back on the air. There's a funny story that he tells about, I guess it's okay to tell now, Mike Feasey is no longer with us.
We can talk about him. That's okay.
He's a wonderful guy.
Yep.
Mike was a friend and also was the general manager at WJR. And through his Gary's relationship with Mike, he was able to get the program from just a half hour, moved it out to an hour, then he moved it out to 2 hours. And we then started the regular routine of 2 hours on Saturday afternoons and evenings. And
4 to 6 is the slot.
Yep, 4 to 6 is the slot. Typically been there. It's changed around some bit. But the basic structure of the program has always been we've started doing things like you guys do here with M-Square TechCast, really, talking with people who are part of the industry around here. It might have been Jan Ness with online technology. It might have been Dave Cole talking about the car industry. Or, for instance, I'll give you this last weekend, it was Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau about what had been going on at the car show. Well, what does that have to do with the internet? Oh, a whole lot with technology now, because it's gone well beyond the internet advisor to being just this whole digital world that we live in. So people will call in, you know, about not only their computers, but their phones. So the program was two parts. First part, interviewing people like Paul Eisenstein. And then the second part, and this is really, I think, has been our secret sauce for now going on 20 years.
So yeah.
We'll be entering our 20th year in February.
Well, congratulations.
Big party.
Wow.
In the media business, you were like 25 years old when it started, right?
So. No, in the media business, having anything that lasts 20 years is simply phenomenal. You know, I mean, in the radio business and the internet business, it's
remarkable.
Amazing.
It's remarkable and so on so many levels for us because we are probably the last locally produced program on WJR by locally produced.
That's actually produced by WJR versus a paid program.
Yep, exactly.
So
most of the other program there, people like yourselves or others who have come in have paid for the time and put the show on the air there. The
gardening show and all this other stuff.
No, that would be an example of one that's kind of like ours. So Dr. Dean and ourselves were one of the few that are left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been remarkable. But also starting, I think it was maybe 5 to 7 years ago, we became part of what was then the Michigan Talk Network.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are affiliated now with stations in Lansing and Grand Rapids, in
Kalamazoo,
Muskegon. And there's one other place. I'm sorry, I forget.
Midland or Flint or no, anymore.
Not that far on the east side. I wish it was on the east side. But anyways, it's Battle Creek, I think.
Oh, is it Battle Creek?
I think it might have been. In any case, that has helped us to stay on and to continue to broadcast. The important thing for me is, and we just got an email that confirmed this to me, guy who is in his 70s, okay, and the WJR audience that has been there listening faithfully is older.
It's AM radio.
They're people who of our age who grew up listening to radio.
Not my age, of course, but
grew up listening to radio. Radio was on all the time.
Sure.
You know, they just keep it on all the time, and they have some of their favorite programs, et cetera. This guy calls and wrote an email and said, I started out listening to you, and I was afraid of the technology, essentially. And he said, you guys have helped me to learn about it, to deal with the problems on it. He says, now I've got, and he goes through a whole list of stuff. He's got a smartphone.
I read that. No, you sent that to me, too.
Yeah, so. Isn't it fascinating?
Yep.
Yeah.
All the stuff he's got, and to me, that's success. First of all, keeping that connection, because I really believe the WJR is an example of, and I don't know how much longer it'll be there, but that vital thing that radio did where you were in touch with somebody.
Yeah, it's called
cared about what was being said.
Yeah, it's service journalism. I mean, that's what that's what the name of it is. I mean, that's you know, what you're doing is actually helping people solve problems directly one-on-one.
Exactly.
And other people learn from that because there are plenty of other people with the same problem.
Exactly. Leo Laporte has been doing that out of California nationally for ages. He's been somebody else who's done that kind of thing. So I am just delighted that in the, I forget the reach of WJR when we're on the air.
You told me around 70,000, give or take.
Because we're in Ontario. We've had calls from Canada. We get calls from the west side of New York. You know, we're in Indiana, Ohio.
You can basically hear the station, especially when the sun gets close to going down. You can hear it from
that's when it goes up to 50,000 watts.
Yeah, well, you can hear it from like Minneapolis to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, east to west. So
I used to do overnights on JR as well. I actually had somebody. I got an email from somebody in Norway.
Whoa.
Who had listened to the program.
That's called Reach.
That's Skip. Yeah,
that's
well,
a Skip. That's a Skip.
That's before the internet. Now, of course, WJR.
It was really good Aurora that
internet.
Night, right? Yeah.
That was exactly it.
Yeah.
And then we partnered a couple years ago, and I get on at the end of the first hour and do 5 minutes of headlines. Foster picks the headlines he likes from my newsletter, and we discuss those.
And you guys all make fun of each other and have
pretty
fun.
Much, yeah.
All right. It's an entertaining show. The first hour, to me, is a really good thing to listen to if you want to plug into the tech community here in Michigan.
Yep.
So.
Well, that's exactly what we try to do. We try to promote technology in Michigan. So if we find a software company that's here, Grand Circus was an example of one
they're a training company.
Right, but companies that are involved in technology and promoting it, we love to plug into that and support that as much as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second hour,
tell me who the other guys that are on the show, though. I want to mention them, too,
because
they're really good.
They really make the program happen, to my mind, along with Gary and myself. There's Ed Riddell and Cal Carson, both of them who are senior technology troubleshooters with GM.
Yes.
Oh, are we allowed to say that?
We just did.
Okay, all right.
And
for a large company that does autos in Detroit. Who could that be?
A major automaker, as they say on Wheel of Fortune. Right, yeah. But to me, the interplay between them is fun, too, because one's an Apple guy and one's not.
Exactly. Cal is a diehard. Matter of fact, he's the head now of Mac Group Detroit.
Is he?
And Ed is just a wonderful guy. He talks about going out to his shed and sacrificing a 2x4. He is a tinkerer.
Okay.
He loves to tear things apart and put them back together again. And then we also have Shane Hamlin, who was for a while on the Podcast Detroit Network here, doing a game show. And Shane works. He has a shop that sells computers and services to them. And he's also
in Clawson or something.
And Sterling Heights.
Sterling Heights. Okay. Yeah.
So those are the regulars.
Okay.
They're a whole lot of fun.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then Gary can't keep a job, so he's been all over the place. Beaumont. He was with Borders.
He was with Flagstar, I think.
Flagstar. I think Flagstar was his last one. So no, in all due respect, he's like gets hired to go in there and straighten him out for a year.
When Gary says he's going on a job search, we all kind of go, "Oh boy." Which means he's got like, how many offers do you have, Gary? Well, I've got like 5 offers, and I'm trying, for most people.
He's got that big house in Ann Arbor to support. So I got invited to his Christmas party this year. Wow, what a spread.
Oh, boy. In all fairness, Gary is just an extraordinarily talented person who is tremendously respected in the IT circles in Michigan with very good reason.
All right.
We could let Foster take us out, but we got about a minute left.
I'll do that eventually.
The other way to take us out. But tell us, folks, now they're all excited. If they want to find WJR on the internet, take them on.
760 AM is our radio spot on the dial, and that's from 4 to 6 on Saturday afternoons. Or you can go to internetadvisor.net, and there you'll find our podcast of the program for the week.
And Advisor is with OR, by the way.
Yes.
That's
so
right.
Also, we promote it. All the podcast partners that we do, WJR's Internet Advisor is one of them. You can find it at mitechnews.com. And then in my Wednesday newsletter that goes out to about 5,000 folks, we push it out there as well.
All right. Well, we've reached the end of another episode. This was a good one. So quickly. Yeah. Fastest hour in radio, I like to say. And I want to thank our guests, Foster Brown, of course, of the Internet Advisor and WJR, Rick Beckers of Cloud Tech One, Enrico Schaefer from Drone Law.
Ricky Suave.
Yeah, Rico Suave. From DroneLaw.pro. And in all seriousness, he really is an expert. And speaking of experts, man, we started the show with one of the best, David Cole, from the Automotive of industry. And this has been a fun one, so I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back here next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, you can listen to us anytime you like at PodcastDetroit.com. The segments are all there.
Yep.
For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared Techcast and our great and good friend.
Take us out, Foster.
Thank you very much for being with us here on M Squared Techcast. And remember that you can find them at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared Techcast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.